And welcome back to another special episode of the Epic Asparagus Podcast. I'm your host, Bruce, and I'm joined on the line by Lux. Lux, how are you now?
And I'm doing good.
So, ladies and gentlemen, we had to delay our recording. Usually we try and record on Monday evenings. And Lux, what happened down in your way that got in the way of recording? Just what went down exactly?
And like we had some pretty wild spring weather yesterday, and a friend of mine ended up spinning out and going in the ditch.
What was going? It's May, dude. What was happening? That your guy lost control. They should have been reasonably. Even the roads were slick, like wet. They shouldn't have been like in a ditch. Come on, what happened? was he straight racing, Lux? You just don't want to tell us.
And no, actually, what happened was, you know, there was this guy that was trying to get around him, and they were being kind of rude, so that he was trying to get away from them.
Ah, there we go.
Yeah,
I see. Other inconsiderate drivers.
Yeah, like they were getting too close for comfort and for his liking.
Makes sense to me. Makes sense to me. Oh my goodness! But yeah, lots of things. So, how is this your owner of your store pleased that things are going to slowly start opening up again later this month? Yep. Excited?
Yeah.
Nice.
They even scheduled a celebratory draft.
Oh, well, there we go. So hopefully you guys are starting to see some things get back to normal. I mean, yep. I still like obviously your store is still going to keep some precautions in place. I'm sure, right? Like people are going to be masked and. But that's nice that you guys are going to be able to get things sort of resuming some semblance of normal again. We're probably a while yet from that, but good for you guys. It'll be exciting, and means your shop owner might be able to keep the lights on a little bit longer. Good for your owner for being able to weather it this long. Like it's been a long, long time. Has your store done okay? Like throughout the whole pandemic?
Yeah, and like thankfully the current owner and has a side job. He's an engineer.
Oh, so he's employed. He's doing this for like a labor of love sort of idea. That's not bad. So he's doing okay for himself, and there we go. And you'll be able to hopefully get back to drafting and playing some EDH and paper, because that's a pretty big announcement. And like your state's pretty open, if I'm not mistaken. Like you guys have opened up pretty much. Almost fully, right? Basically.
Yeah, but we still have a mask and being mandated.
Masks, yeah, okay, that's fair. I think masks. I'll be honest. I think that's a pretty small price to pay on the whole. Like really.
And extra
sanitizing your hands and are you going to keep the plexiglass mask or plexiglass up?
And everyone's still doing that. The only thing that really wasn't being done around here since the beginning was the social distancing. Like nobody was ever doing that.
Oh, that's too bad. Cause like people are doing it here pretty hard. So like, I've been having to teach from the bowling alley. My wife owns the bowling alley. I end up helping out at it much because, well, she's my wife. And so I've been teaching from there because we can't operate it. And so, on my way walking from the house over to the bowling alley, and walking down the sidewalk and people give you a very wide berth because of social distancing. And I had a woman today walk by, put her mask on as I went by. And I'm like, okay, like, I guess, I mean, just walking, I'm not like, I'm going to stop and have a conversation with you, but anyway, whatever. I mean, people are wanting to stay safe and we're not quite at the vaccine, like everyone's vaccinated yet. Like I've got my first vaccination next week, I guess. So, which is pretty exciting. I'm pretty pumped for it. But it's certainly going to be an interesting summer. Hopefully, you guys do well and get things back on the rails for your store. So that'll be good. Just in time for some MH2 as well, which is going to be looks going to be sweet. Oh boy! All right, so let's get on some housekeeping and we'll get on with the show tonight. All right, Lux?
Yep.
So don't forget, folks, if you like what you're hearing here on the podcast, you can check all of our content out on thelotuscouncil.com. So that means the podcast each and every week. I need to make sure I get the video deck text up on the Lotus Council. Right now, they're available on YouTube. So I've got two up, one for Nivineral, and then I got one for a Hoffrey deck. I've got another one that I recorded the other day for Garuda. So there's going to be, like, I think the plan there, folks, is going to be weekly Brawl deck techs, because they are easily pretty straightforward to do on. On Moxfield, I don't even need to have other players to play against. So my on a camera, happening. Come on in, check it out, the Discord. Poke around the channel, see what you find. Maybe you come and stop in for a Twitch stream and watch Wow Wow play, or to watch some product getting opened, or just hang out and chat in the Discord with lots of cool people. Tell them Bruce and Lux send you. They're going to treat you good. That's a promise. It's good people, all right? There's good people over there. You will not be sorry. So come on and see, and check out the lotuscouncil.com. All right, so segment one tonight, Lux, we're going to have our usual segment of Garbage or Great. Segment two is going to be our poking fun at a particular deck. Today we're going to be poking fun at Simic decks. Then we'll have some previews from MH2 and Dungeons & Dragons set. And then last but not least, we have the latest of our Elder Dragons decks. We're going to have Galazath tonight as our decks. So let's get down to business. Up first, we have Garbage or Great, where we decide if a card is garbage or if it is great. And our tonight is we have Circle of Protection White, which is one and a white for an enchantment. One generic. The next time, a white source of your choice would deal damage to you this turn. Prevent that damage. Now, this sort of, I'm sort of like imagining this is sort of similar to like any of the Circle of Protection enchantment there, Lux. So we can talk about any of the Circle of Protections, or also known as Cops. So are the Cops cycle garbage, or are they great?
They're just flat out garbage.
Elaborate. Tell me more. Why? Because like that's a powerful effect. Like if you're the deck as being shut down by a Circle of Protection, that's a big deal. Because I'm going to agree with you here. It's garbage. But we need to make sure we tell our audience why we think it's garbage. Because I was at EDH Rec, and you know how many people play Circle of Protection White? Of all the decks that are registered on EDH Rec, do you know how many of them play Circle of Protection White?
How many?
160. Point final. That is it. So when we're talking, like, there are decks that play, like, Sol Ring, and Sol Ring literally figures in every deck, and we're talking hundreds of thousands of decks. And now we're going to turn around and look at Circle of Protection White, and Circle of Protection White does not figure in 1,000 decks. It figures in 160. This card is utter trash, all right? Now, folks, here's the thing, all right? For starter, it's a color hoser, all right? So it hoses white cards and white sources of damage in particular, not other spells. It doesn't counter white spells. It doesn't prevent the white player from playing Avacyn or from doing any or from blowing up your land or wiping the board with a board wipe. It just prevents damage in a very narrow and specific color. So if your opponents attack you and they're not white, it doesn't do you anything. So you spent a card slot on a card that does nothing in many cases. All right? It doesn't, like I said, doesn't impact their spells they cast. It doesn't stop them from playing creatures. So it's very narrow in its application. Sure, if you get a white deck that wants to come after you and attack you hard with creatures, it is a very powerful effect. But it's still very narrow. And last but not least, I don't know about Europe. What is your impression of somebody? If you're sitting down across the table and they play Cop White, what do you think of that person?
And honestly, I'm just thinking that, you literally could have used that card slot for anything other than that.
Okay, that's fair. I mean, I question the judgment too. You know what? I think this might be a hot take. I question whether, if you're a coward. That's what I'm thinking. You're a coward. You're gonna play that. You're gonna play cops. You're gonna play color hosing garbage in your deck because you are on the off chance I might be playing white. Yeah, no thanks. So I'm judging you as a person, as a deck builder. I'm like, why did you do that? And sure, you might win tonight's game because I have a white deck. I mean, maybe my Abzan deck is going to fold because I can't deal damage with my white creatures that are all wearing tokens. However, I am also saying like you are winning on the back of a bad card. I don't put a lot of stock in that. Not to mention that if it gets removed, now you're pretty much up a creek. So, folks, we can do better than circle protections. So, this is a public service announcement to all of you out there. If you have a circle protection, don't play it. Don't play it. Find something else in there. Play a ghostly prison. Play something else that is going to deter your opponents from attacking you, because circle protection just makes people angry with you. And I'll be very honest with you. I don't think that's something you want to do with your deck. You would rather put your if you think about it, I was having this conversation today on someone in Discord. If people are going to sit down to play with you, don't make them waste their time by playing these sorts of cards that essentially make it nigh on impossible to eliminate somebody if they're being attacked by white creatures. It's really difficult, really frustrating thing. Our time is valuable. If we're all players who play, none of us are playing for a living, are we? Lux, you play Magic to make money?
Nope.
I'm pretty sure I'm lighting money on fire by having this podcast each week. So when I do sit down to play, I want to do the thing that my deck's supposed to do. And if you play a color hosing card such as this, don't get me wrong, there are times to play color hosers. But this sort of effect, no, man, it's not on.
Yeah.
So
I was going to say is that I have scared people in my play group enough to run cop green.
Fair. Look, that's your playgroup adapting to the meta, right? You've adapted because either green is super prevalent and you're looking to do it just to take it to them and say, ha. But if you're routinely building cops into your deck, no. And we're probably spending more time on this, but to me, this is sort of one of these cards that's I do judge you for running this card. I think it's a bad card. It's a color hoser and it does not engender good play. It makes the game long and plotting. If you're the person who is, let's imagine you and I, Lux, are heads up. You have cop white, and I have a predominantly white deck. All that's happening here is the match is being drawn out further and further by the fact that this cop is out there, and when we should really just be shuffling up and starting another game. But there we have it. The cop's keeping you in the game. And that's the problem in the late game. If you have a pile of mana and I have a pile of white creatures, I'm poking you for three damage, and you're yep, whatever, I'll crack back, and I'm you've won the game on the back of a card that is not very good. So, not a fan. I think it's garbage. I do not want to see it get played. That's probably a stronger opinion than I usually bring to the table. But yeah, not a fan of Circle Protection White. Take it and get lost. Any final words, Lux?
Yeah, it's like I said, though, and they're garbage cards, but I just find it funny that I scare people enough to be willing to run them in their decks.
Oh, don't get me wrong. With anything else in this game, there is a time and a place to play these cards. There is. But if you're routinely looking I want to play my cop white, red, blue, green, if you want to do that, come on. No, thank you. Not fun.
It's just like me running Jockle Hops in my deck for no reason, other than for laughs.
But you're not improving the quality of the game by cops. So, let's improve the quality of the game and not play cards that just frustrate everybody. So I'm just not a fan. I'm not a big fan. Would like to see them removed generally, and to be zero of them listed instead of 160. All right, segment two tonight. So we're going to be taking segment two. We're taking a chance to sit back and sort of poke fun at a color combination. So we've previously did this already with Is It, and we've had sort of poke some fun at Is It, had a good time with it. So this time we're going to be poking fun at Simic, which is a little more closer to home for Lux and I as players who are dedicated to playing green. You know, like Lux, like it's a little harder for us to poke fun at green, correct?
Yeah,
a little bit, right? But not a lot. So, because you know what, Simic still got blue, so we can make fun of it. So,
yeah.
All right. So I got ten reasons. So, all right. So we've got start number 10. Favorite cards. If you are a blue-green deck, your favorite cards are lands and nope. That's what you want to do. You want to play lands, you want to play nope. Really? Is that your deck? Come on. We can do better. Lands and nopes. But how am I think about it? Atchova, AC. Like we talked about it with Chris a couple of weeks ago. Like there's a lot of Simic commanders, or Sona last week. We talked about a lot of Simic commanders, and they're all pretty much hinged on like playing lots of lands and lots of noping. And Quandrix is like a prime example of it right now, where the Quandrix color combination of blue and green wants you to hit eight lands, and then you get bonuses. So, yep, you're playing no lands, and then you want to back it up with nopes so you can counter what your opponents want to do. Number nine. How many cards did Simic manage to get banned the last like 2 years? Oh, lots of them.
Yeah, I can't even count how anymore.
There's a lot of them. Like, and there probably should be a lot more. Let's think about that.
Yeah, like Simic, what are you doing?
Like you're breaking cards. Like, I mean, as Wizards, obviously breaking the cards, but like you are being just the most ridiculous thing ever if you are getting stuff banned all the time. Oh, so let's see. Let's have a quick look at the banned restricted cards right now. So, oh yeah, look at this. Oh, so banned Omnath. It's blue-green. Uro, it's blue-green. What else? More Uro gets banned. More Wilderness Reclamation. That's more green cards. Mystic Sanctuary. That's a blue card. come on. Uro, what Uro again? Okay, oh, it's okay. Look at that. Look at all these fun cards that get banned. All right, so folks, there's lots of cards that are blue and green that got banned recently. So yeah, how many is too many blue and green cards to get banned? All right, number eight. Yes. Ander +1/+1 counters theme. How innovative. Really? Like, I mean, I'm kind of the opinion that like this is what blue-green does. They play lands, they want to back it up with counterspells, and then they just make things that are large wearing a lot of counters. Sound about right?
Yep.
That's really what it does. So it's not a particularly series of innovative strategies. I know right back from like Ravnica with the original Ravnica block and the graph mechanic, then you get evolve and then adapt. And now in Quandrix, you get the fractals that have got tokens on it. Like, this is like we've gone back to the well for more +1/+1 counters. Yeah, this is like old as the hills. So, yeah, it's super innovative. And I'll be honest with you, it gets a little boring. Have you played the Azuri with the experience counters, Alex?
And
Azuri Claw of Progress? Yeah, that one just makes counters too. So, it's a little frustrating. It's just a little frustrating. When they keep going back to the same old strategies of blue and green, when I think there's probably other things you could do, like number seven, yes, Prime Speaker Vanifar. How could we forget the new birthing pod? And what happened to Vanifar? Well, let's have a look at Simic commanders and have a quick look just where dear old Vanifar fits on the depth chart. So, look at that. Oh, there it is. In the top 10, 680 decks, But if you look at like Tatyova, Tatyova's got like 2,200. So they gave us something new to do, and nobody did it, or very few people did it. You know why no one did it, Lux? Because it's super predictable. All right, it's the same play pattern because Vannevar just creates a chain, and you can go and chain out all your things. And every time you go and get a thing that untaps your thing, so you get your corridor monitor, then you get your bounding crisis, and then you get the breaching hippocamp. And every time you get one of these creatures, you untap Prime Vicekeeper Vannevar, and you get to do it again. And it's pretty predictable, to be perfectly honest, because there aren't that many different blue and green creatures that have got the ability to untap Vannevar to allow you to chain them one after the other. So the deck just sort of plays the same way until you can end the game. So it's a little on the, it's a little on the predictable side, let's just say. A little on the predictable side. Number six, we get Kinnan. Ah, yes. Kinnan. Who could have seen that guy as being broken? Hmm. Oh. This guy drives you crazy. Have you seen? This guy drives me nuts. Because, oh, wait, you tap a non-land permanent, it makes double the mana. Who doesn't want mana doublers on your mana rocks, on your mana dorks? Just come on. And then, when you get enough mana, you get to go look for your non-human win condition. Ugh. Yuck. So, again, so they did something different with Kinnan, and it's just more mana ramp payoff. Really? Ah. All right. Number five. I mean, you get Infect, and that sees plenty of play, but do you feel dirty yet? Like, you should. Like, come on. Like, it's Infect. Blue-green Infect? Is this a thing? Do people want to play this in Commander? What do you think, Lux? Infect? Is this a thing?
And do you want to say anything?
To play I suppose...
I could, but I'm already seen as a villain by my playgroup.
Yes, exactly, because it leads to one thing and one thing only, that you're going to be persona non grata. So, come on, folks. We don't want to do Infect. Kinnan's dull. Vannevar's like a chain. Plus one counters. Like, we're talking about powerful stuff in blue and green, but not a lot of different stuff to do with it. Oh, wait. You know what we can do? We can do big sea critters. Well, that sounds a bit more interesting, doesn't it?
Yeah.
A little bit, at least, right? Yeah. Who doesn't want to play? Lux, are you in? Sea monsters?
And just depends on how big you can make them.
Oh, we can make them large. We can make them large and in charge. Right? I don't know. Sea creatures has never been my thing. But I suppose you could go with sea critters if you want. Making me real big, real scary, I guess. Is that new Kraken? Let's see. AC, Eryxithes, Spawning Kraken. That's the one I was thinking of. Yakoma. You get some big things. You get some big stuff. But you get a whole bunch of, like, I'm pretty sure your curve starts at, like, 8 mana. Tromacratus is your early drop at 7. Some sixes. Oh, no. Look at all these Krakens. Oh, no. Yeah, no, I'm out. They're too big, too expensive. Not playing those things. All right. Number three. Wait. How many cards did you get banned again? Jesus, yeah. Guys, come on.
The majority of the banned and restricted list is Simic cards.
Exactly, like, come on. Look at all of you. You're bad people. All you Simic players out there. Number two, you are literally have among the most expensive color combinations to play against if you want to be optimal. Like, hello, Did you notice? You're playing double the seasons. You're playing parallel lives. You're playing forces of will. You're playing fierce guardianship. You're playing mana drains. And the list goes on. Like, you could very easily just empty your wallet into your deck. Like, is this what you want to do with your time there, Lux?
And honestly, no, because it kind of defeats the purpose of this whole show, doesn't it?
It sure does, but I'm of the opinion that if you want to get into like the plus one counters themes or the tokens themes, particularly when you're backed by blue, like you're pushed real hard to get into some of these expensive cards. And like I was looking, if you're playing like if you're playing tokens, you want to play Merfolk tokens, you want to do something like that, you get like you're getting to parallel lives and doubling seasons and stuff. Costs so much money. So some people out there can get into those, but it's such an expensive. And if presumably people want to play optimally, it's just real expensive. Real expensive. I mean, I would argue, sure, like other color combinations are pricey, but I don't think you're steered into quite the tier of like expensive cards that, you know, blue and green get. And they play every blue and green deck seems to play the same suite of cards, right? Like you're pushed to play your Force of Will, or your Force of Negation, your Fierce Guardianships, your Mana Drains, like a pile of land ramp, and then doubling season and parallel lives. And they're right there. You've dropped, you know, several $100 to get just, and you haven't even done it yet. You haven't done the thing that your deck wants to do yet. So I don't know, man. It's a little much to play. Like I've got a blue green deck, and like I don't want to do that. It does something very different. I think I've talked about it on the show before, but it's something very different compared to what we're like this sort of build here. But like so many of the cards show up as being cards in the top. You know, I don't know what you want to talk about. Like the top 50 most common cards in the set are just all these super pricey.
Yeah,
you know, pieces like pulling up right now. Like, let's go look at staples. So you get things like there's Psych Rift. You get there's a lot of cards that are popping up here that are just pricey.
And I still have my parallel lives too.
I think that's a good choice. And did you know, Fierce Guardianship is like almost $40, over $40.
Huh.
That just came out last year. Good heavens. Anyway, wow. All right, and folks, number one, you get to play Scoot Swarm because you're a deck that wants to play all the lands and you want to play all the Scoot Swarms. And that makes everybody at the table angry with you and no one is your. Plain and simple. All right, so there we have Simic version of why your deck sucks, which is, again, just a reminder, a friendly way of poking fun at Simic players, because you know what? I love Simic decks. I've got a couple that I've got built around here in my basement, so it doesn't mean that I don't like them. It just means I got to stop and take a poke them fun at myself at what I've got built. So, love myself a Simic deck. But he's gonna stop and poke fun at the archetype in general and what it seems to want to do. All right, Lux, we're on to segment three. We're talking new previews from what came out over the weekend. So we had a whole bunch of previews for MH2, and then we had some cards from Dungeons and Dragons. So where do you want to start, MH2, or do you want to start with Dungeons and Dragons?
Yeah, let's start with MH2.
Okay, I think this is going to be a little bit easier. So, first off, we're getting the NE fetches being reprinted. So, MH2 is coming out this June now. I think it's been delayed a week. So, it's coming out. It's going to contain all the enemy fetches. So, those are the ones that... So, you have Arid Mesa, Verdant Catacomb, Misty Rainforest, Marsh Flats, and Scalding Tarn. Those five are considered to be enemy fetches, and they first appeared in Zendikar, the original Zendikar set, and they are super popular and super well played in every format that could play them. So probably getting them reprinted seems like a good way to get them to sell the set, but also to get the cards back out into circulation so people can play with them. Correct there, Lux?
Yep.
Also, as an added bonus here, folks, so you're going to get the enemy fetches in regular order. You're going to get them in an extended art border treatment. And you're also going to get them in, get this, old border, Lux. Ooh. Yikes. How expensive is that going to be? Like, that's going to be pricey. Ooh! Could you imagine old border foil Scalding Tarn?
Honestly, like, it's something I really hope that I open up in a draft.
Yes, and then when you open it, you sell it right away. Not that you don't want to play it, but let's be real, the several hundred dollars you're going to get for it is going to go a long way towards filling out your collection. Like, whoo, yikes. Also, they're going to be reprinting Counterspell, which is always a good thing. The fact of putting Counterspell into Modern is, I think, probably an okay thing at this point. I don't really play a lot of Modern, but listening to people who do, and listening to people and reading about people who play Modern talk about, you know, probably seems like a pretty fair card to put into the format, considering where Modern is these days. Right?
Yep.
Then the BioBox promo is Sanctum Prelate. And Sanctum Prelate is one white for a 2/2 human cleric. As the Sanctum Prelate enters the battlefield, choose a number. Non-creature spells with converted mana cost equal to the chosen number can't be cast. So, again, useful. I'm not sure how much play this is going to see in Commander. I don't know how much it sees currently. I mean, maybe it sees a lot. I mean, let's go see. I'm pretty okay with them putting it into Modern to see what it can do there. I mean, maybe it's too powerful. I have a suspicion that it may not be overly relevant in the format, to be perfectly honest. Sanctum Prelate appears in, you know, 1,100 decks, so it's really not played that prominently in Commander. I think because it's really hard to pick a mana cost that really matters in Commander. Like, I think in Modern or Legacy, where the spread is much narrower. Like, when people things go, when it can go from, you know, 1, 2, or 3 mana, well, you can pick, you know, you can pick one and turn off your opponent's, like, Fatal Push or Swords to Plowshares, or I guess not Swords to Plowshares, but Path to Exile. But in Commander, I don't know. But it's cool to see it reprinted. And they're giving us a new art treatment for it. So I guess it's pretty cool, right? Thoughts? Not really? We have some new cards. We have 3 new cards that that are not reprints that we instead shared with us. So we have Brainstone. Sort of a play on Brainstorm. So you have one generic mana for an artifact. It says 2 and a tap, sacrifice Brainstone, draw 3 cards, then put 2 cards from your hand on top of your library in any order. So Lux, what do you think? Is Brainstone any good?
And it could be. Like, it's one of those cards that would fit in certain decks.
I think it's going to be reasonably well played, I think. I think it's actually, you know, a reasonably interesting card. Because now you're giving a Brainstorm effect to lots of different colors that wouldn't normally get it. And so I think that's probably ultimately a benefit. Particularly if people have, you know, Evolving Wilds or Fabled Passages or Fetches or ways to shuffle their deck. I think that's reasonably powerful. So you can shuffle away a bad, you know, bad cards and hopefully hit new ones off the top of your deck. So, no, I think Brainstone is going to be pretty interesting. Also, I think I like the casting cost at 1 mana. Think that's, you know, a good spot. The only part I'm not a huge fan of is the activation. But the fact that you can use, like, Lurrus to bring it back, or there's lots of loops you can create with this sort of card, I'm pretty okay with Brainstone. I think it'd be pretty interesting. I think it's pretty interesting. Diamond Lion. Want to read it?
Yeah, and Diamond Lion, for two generic mana, you get a 2/2 artifact creature capped. And tap, discard your hand, sacrifice Diamond Lion. Add 3 mana of any one color. Activate only as an instant.
So this is Lion's Eye Diamond on a creature now. And they're putting it in a modern, which is pretty cool. Pretty wild, right? Like, that's pretty neat. Are you excited for this in Commander?
And honestly, it might have its use. Like, we'll have to wait till it sees play.
Yeah, like I'm pretty excited for this one. I think there's going to be some combo decks that might want to play it. But I also think there's going to be reanimator strategies that are going to want to play this. So could you imagine, like, let's imagine you have your a really awesome reanimation target in your hand, and you need to find a way to get it to your graveyard. Like, Diamond Lion is going to be, like, a really dynamite way to do that. So you pitch your hand, throw your reanimation target in the bin, and then you do an, like, an Unburial Rites or, you know, whatever, to get your reanimation target out of your bin and back onto the battlefield in short order. And Diamond Lion's gonna even help pay for the activated cost on your Unburial Rites in your graveyard. So I like this sort of card. I think this card has got, you know, a reasonable amount of applicability. So I'm a big fan. I'm a big fan of this. I know people talked about how abusable it could be in Modern. I think it's fine. I think it's a fine card. But I also think it's got it. And there are going to be decks out there that really, really want this card. Because they're looking to cheat something gigantic onto the battlefield. So, yeah. Anyway. So, yeah. Diamond Lion. Pretty excited. This looks cool. We have, last but not least, very interesting card, Urza's Saga. All right. So, Urza's Saga is now, it's an enchantment land. So, it's a saga, also a land. Chapter 1, Urza's Saga gains tap. Add a colorless mana. And then chapter two, Urza's Saga gains tap, 2/2, create a 0/0 colorless creature construct artifact creature token. With this creature token, it gets +1/+1 for each artifact you control. And chapter three, search your library for an artifact card with mana cost 0 or 1, put it onto the battlefield, then shuffle. What do you think of this one? This one's kind of an interesting card, isn't it?
Yeah, this one might actually see a lot of play in EDH and mainly artifact decks.
I think it's going to see an awful lot of play. Because let's be honest, folks. This is a tutor. Like, this is a tutor that is just straight up good. Like, it's on a land. It's a land, and that is very, very powerful, to say the least. So, yeah, no, I'm a big fan, a big, big fan. Let's see, what can you get for artifacts that you could use? Like, you can get a Sol Ring, obviously. You can get a Mana Vault, get a Aether Vial. That seems good. Aether Vial seems like a good target to go tutor up out of your deck. What else is some other things you could find? Altar of the Brood, that's another good one. That's a good way to make mill opponents out. That's what you want to do. Amulet of Vigor, if you want to play like big mana decks, that you're going to, you know, allow you to play a lot of land. Animation Module. There's a lot of cards, folks. There's a lot of cards that you can get back or that you can tutor up out of your deck on a land. And, like, folks, I don't think I can stress it enough. Like, we've learned that lands that have effects are very powerful. It looks like there are a lot of very powerful effects on lands, and they are worth it because now you're not taking up a spell slot in your deck. You're giving up a land spot. So lands that have spell-like abilities are really powerful. This, I think, is going to be very, very, very powerful. So Mana Vault. Yeah, Mana Vault. Yeah, you can get a Mana Vault. You can get a Mana Crypt. You can get your... What else can you get? You can get Well, Sol Ring, obviously. You get Sol Ring. There's just a lot of really good artifacts you can pull out of your deck with this. And on land, this is strong. Very strong. So, yeah, big fan. I actually like Urza Saga and Diamond Line quite a bit. The other cards are fine, too. They're fine. Any last thoughts on the MH2 cards?
And it's like you said, you know, like Urza Saga is definitely going to be seeing like a lot of play in EDH. And then seems like we got ourselves another an Artifact Affinity deck staple.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it's going to go right in there, and there's no reason not to. No reason not to. All right, let's go back to this. Just move on to the Dungeons & Dragons set. So we're going to have... So you've got five cards from it. So we've got... let's start with the exciting one. We have Tiamat. Do you want to read Tiamat for us or Lux?
Yeah, let me pull it up real quick.
No worries.
All right, now Tiamat for two in Wooburg. And legendary creature, dragon god, 7/7, flying. When Tiamat enters the battlefield, if you cast it, search your library for up to five dragon cards not named Tiamat. They each have different names. Reveal them, put them in your hand, and then shuffle.
So, wow. I like that. That's a fun commander.
Yeah.
So, let's be honest, folks. It's a dragon tribal commander. And dragons are sort of one of those tribes that never really gets old. I kind of like this as an alternative to playing Ramos, the Dragon Engine, or the Ur-Dragon, because if you see the Ur-Dragon, what do you do to the Ur-Dragon player?
And
basically, like, what do you do?
And honestly, you're going to focus them.
Exactly. Like, everyone knows you see the Ur-Dragon and you need to take them out. Because if you don't, you're going to get overwhelmed by the dragons. Like, the dragons are too big, too powerful, too much. There's too much to them, and they're all flying, and they all have filthy abilities. So Ur-Dragon players, you know, are probably lamenting the fact that they get smoked all the time for having this giant creature and the eminence ability on it to boot. Like, it's really strong. So Tiamat's an interesting alternative. Tricky to cast, but I think, you know, the effect, once you can cast it, even if it dies, you can get a bunch of dragons, like tutor up five cards out of your deck. That's a lot. Like, five for one? Yee! So I like Tiamat. I think it'll be fun. It's going to be a fun yeah. commander. I mean, and I think it's going to make for some really interesting dragon decks. So I'm pretty stoked.
What I can say is that since this set is going to be based around Dungeons & Dragons, and they already have Tiamat, then they better add the other big dragon.
Is there another one? I'm not familiar with Dungeons & Dragons lore. Is there another big one? Probably a few of them, I'm sure. Like, it's called Dungeons & Dragons. But yeah, Tiamat is even one that someone such as myself, who's not super well versed in the world of Dungeons and Dragons, probably has heard that card of that character before. So, all right, up next we have Vorpal Sword. So we have a black for a artifact equipment. Equipped creature gets +2/+0 and has death touch. Black until end of turn. Vorpal Sword gains whatever equipped creature deals combat damage to a player. That player loses the game and equip for black and black. What do you think, Lux? Is this any good?
And honestly, like, it's one of those cards that I'd have to see in play.
I want to try this. I'm not going to lie. I think this card is fun. I'm not hugely in love with the opponent loses the game clause. I would rather I win the game, but I guess you can't make me do that on a sword. But I think it's pretty funny. Like, if you could, you just unlocked the next level of gameplay if you can manage to trigger this and kill somebody. I think that's funny. So I'm a big fan. I also think the rate, like, single mana for to cast it, equip for a pair. I think that's that makes it very playable. And then plus two plus O with death touch, like people, no one wants to screw with your creature if it has death touch. Right? So like that seems good. And almost like a surefire bet now to get the damage through and deal damage to your opponent. And so yeah, like sure you can't activate it. Big deal, but you can certainly get it through. So that's like half the battle. So I like it. I like Vorpal Sword. All right. Next, we get Portable Hole. Lux, what about Portable Hole?
After in one white and artifact, when Portable Hole enters the battlefield, exile target non-land permanent and opponent controls with mana value 2 or less until Portable Hole leaves the battlefield.
So this is like a glass casket, but like it can get any non-land permanent, which is kind of nice. You can get an artifact. It can get whatever else, like an enchantment maybe, or whatever. Like, do you think you're going to see yourself running this very much in Commander Lux? What do you think? I mean, I'm looking at it. I'm thinking about all the cards that you could nab with this that are going to be, you know, seriously problematic. I don't know, like. It hits a mana crypt. It hits a Sol Ring. It hits a mana vault. It hits hardened scales. What else does it want to hit? It hits mana dorks if you care. Let's see. How about any commanders? And the top commanders, what is it? Does it hit any of the top commanders in this? It hits. No. Oh dear. It's not hitting any of the top commanders. Awkward. Well, that's a problem. Literally hits none of them. Oh, there it is. It hits a Patrick. It's the first commander that it hits that I can see. It hits. Man, still going. Oh no. Now we're in the top 100 and still only hit one. Yikes. 100, it hits one commander. I guess it hits Thrasios. That's two.
Honestly, that's understandable considering that a lot of the top commanders and have higher mana costs.
Yeah, no. So, I mean, there's going to be useful things for you to hit, but I'm not convinced that you're going to play Portable Hole very frequently in Commander. That's my own take on it. Like, I just think people are going to pass it. Because it's so restrictive, people are going to just pass it over for other things. In Modern, I can see it get played, right? Like, it's going to zap all sorts of things. But I don't think it's going to zap anything very much in Commanders. So I think people are going to pass. And maybe they prove me wrong. Because, I mean, like, Culling Ritual seems to be a card that is similarly templated to eliminate non-land permanents with converted mana cost 2 or less. So Portable Hole sort of in the same vein, just a little bit different. Up next, we have Power Word Kill. Lux, you want to go ahead and read it for us?
And this is yours.
Oh, good deal. Power Word Kill. One and a black for instant. Destroy target non-angel, non-demon, non-devil, non-dragon creature. So, sure. Decent removal.
Yep.
This will get run. I mean, it's not fancy, but it'll get run. And then you pray that somebody's not showing up with the Kalia deck, because then you go die. This is not stopping anything. But let's be honest, and I'm going to bet on most board states, this is going to have a legal target somewhere. So, And last but not least, we have Prosperous Innkeeper. Go ahead, Lux.
And Prosperous Innkeeper for one in a green and one a halfling citizen. When Prosperous Innkeeper enters the battlefield, create a treasure token. Whenever another creature enters the battlefield under your control, you gain one life.
This is awesome. It's going in your Selesnya decks with the Tristani or any token deck. Because this is going to lead you to like down like a Soul Sisters route. Like this plus your plus Heliod in a tokens deck is just going to go bananas. This is good. This is a good card. And on top of it, it ramps you a little bit too. I mean, not that the green needs the ramp, but this is good. I like this card. This is very good. What are your thoughts?
Like, if I manage to get it, and I might run it.
Yeah, no. Like, I mean, I think it takes a little bit of construction. But like, if you're already in Tristani, like this is going straight in Tristani. Like, there's just no doubt it. So it goes in Tristani. Anytime you populate anything, anytime you like have creatures enter the battlefield, you're going to gain life. You're going to gain more life because of Prosperous Innkeeper. And like, it's just what you want to do. And if you can manage to stick Heliod, like Theros Beyond Death Heliod, with the like the plus encounter, anytime you gain life, like now your things are growing. Like, there's a lot of synergy here. And I think Prosperous Innkeeper is pretty good. So I'll be looking to pick up a couple of copies. Are there other like environments that could want to play it? Yeah, but I think its obvious home is green-white, personally. So that's my initial reaction. So I like it. I think that one's very good. I think it's very good. And it plays into my theory that I think we could almost start moving away from playing dedicated mana rocks and play treasure makers. More and more, because they're making things that make treasure all the time. We're almost there. Any last thoughts on Prosperous Innkeeper, Lux?
Yeah, not really.
No, I think you're less excited about it than I am, so that's fair. Okay, segment four. For segment four, we're going to be looking at yet another Elder Dragon as the commander. So we've done the Witherbloom deck. Chris, when he was on with us a couple of weeks ago, did Velimachus. Tonight, we're going to look at Galazeth. So this is the Prismari deck. Not to be confused with the Prismari precon, this is very different. So my whole premise when I brewed this one up, Lux, was not actually Galazeth. Do you know what my premise was for the deck?
I'm actually looking at it right now in like Rutha.
Yeah, so I originally wanted to brew up Rutha because this environment of Strixhaven has given this Simic stuff, stuff a lot of tools to double up and copy spells. And I wanted to lean right into that. And I think I was sort of spitballing. So you get a lot of doubling of effects with this sort of deck. And that's what this deck wants to do. It wants to double things up. It wants to copy things. So let's start with the copiers. Like this is what you want to do. You want to build up. And it's kind of stormy, I don't know, kind of storm feel. So obviously you're getting Ral Storm Conduit, because if you're playing things that are going to duplicate spells, you need the static ability to help you deal damage. All right. If I'm not mistaken, yeah. So Rowan, Scholar of Sparks, is also in here, and that if you can ultimate Rowan, so if she gets to four. You can use her. You get an emblem whenever you cast an instant or sorcery spell. You can pay two if you copy the spell. So you've got two planeswalkers here that play on the idea of copying spells. And I was intending on playing Rowan as Rowan, not as what's the other guy's name? Will. I was not looking to play it for the Will side. And the static on your side is actually relevant. So that's pretty good. And then Saheeli is copying stuff, but it's going to copy a non-creature. Sorry, whenever you can copy another creature. So you could copy your Goblin Electromancer with the token that Saheeli Sublime Artificer makes. So this is Saheeli from War of the Spark. She's pretty strong too, because anytime you cast an instant or sorcery, you make a token. So kind of like a young Pyromancer feel. Other doublers in the set or in the deck, we've got Double Vision, which is a card that is surprisingly powerful. You get Thousand Year Storm and Swarm Intelligence. And the Thousand Year Storm is the big one, where if you can cast a bunch of small spells, you could kind of like combo off with this. Take some setup, but I think you could do it. Right, Lux?
Yeah.
So those are your doublers. And that's what you oh, I forgot one. Primal Amulet. Primal Amulet, when you transform it, is a land that it's called Primal Wellspring. And then tap add one mana of any color to your mana pool. When that mana is spent to cast an instant or sorcery, copy that spell. So I forgot about that, but that's interesting because that's a land in the land slot too, or can be. Pyromancer goggles, double stuff, all good stuff to do. So then you get into your payoffs for casting all these things, where you're going to do things like electrostatic field. You're going to get there's a young Pyromancer. There's a Saheeli Sublime Artificer. Archmage Emeritus, Murmuring Mystic, these sorts of cards that are going to let you, Niv-Mizzet Perrin. Niv-Mizzet Perrin is an awesome combo here because you copy a bunch of spells, if I'm not mistaken, cast instant or sorcery, maybe not, but at the very least you can, it doesn't say copy, but anyway, so. Lots of fun things you can do for payoffs for these cards. For all this copying that you're casting. Now we're going to get on to some of the instances of sorceries that you're going to want to copy a bunch of times. So you got a bunch of one mana enablers that are going to, so they're instances of sorceries, so your Crash Throughs, your Faithless Lunes, your Get Probes, your Serum Visions, Lightning Bolt, Opt, Shock, things like that. Reasonably inexpensive spells in your suite that are going to allow you to utilize your doubling abilities of hopefully of forking stuff. All right. Then you've got some larger things that are going to hopefully allow you to get things done. So things like Mizzic Mastery is pretty fun. Jaya's Immolating Inferno. I'm putting a Crackle with Power in the deck because Crackle seems absolutely absurd. Could you imagine doubling or tripling? Like, let's imagine, Lux, you cast a Get Probe, you cast a Crash Through, you cast a Shock, and then you go for your Crackle with Power. How do you feel about that?
Honestly, I'm not even sure at this point.
I think I need a calculator to figure out how much damage I'm going to be doing. All right. There's a lot of damage that's going to be going to figure in this one, folks. So, yeah. Some of the other things like you're just going to want to do treasure cruising, and you're going to want to go Sublime Epiphany or Magma Opus or Dig Through Time, like you're going to have a really interesting combo of spells you can cast at the high end. That if you can cast a couple of small ones up front, you're going to get copies of some of these big things. Could you imagine like bouncing a Thousand Year Storm off a Dig Through Time two or three times? Like, come on, Lux. Like, does that not sound like the most fun you could have?
And honestly, if I did that, I wouldn't have a playgroup anymore.
Fair, but I'm doing it for you. All right, so so fair enough. But yeah, no. So you got a lot of interesting sort of options to sort of like really leverage your payoffs here. Along the way, I forgot even Gutter Snipe and Jorien. Like Gutter Snipe is just damage. Jorien Burgee is just Burgie's awesome. Like, who wouldn't want Burgie? Tolrin Sky Summoner, like, you're going to be getting so much stuff. And then Storm Kiln Artist is one that I have underappreciated. So Storm Kiln Artist is a 3 and a red for a 2/2 Dwarf Shaman with Magecraft. And it gets +1/+0 for each artifact you control. You're like, whatever, big deal. But it's the Magecraft ability, whenever you cast a copy or an instant or a sorcery spell, create a treasure token. So now you've got something that pays you off for finding and casting all these instances of sorceries. Sounds like fun. Moving on to some ramp. So I'm also once again putting it into play that I don't think I want a lot of dedicated ramp slots. Right? So my artifacts are not heavy ramp targets or ramp options. What I am playing that's going to ramp me are things like Seize the Spoils, Pirate's Pillage, Pirate's Prize, things that are treasure makers, or things like Mana Geyser, which is a card that is typically not in our style, but we're going to play it here. If you can play Mana Geyser, you can literally like swim in so much mana your opponents don't know what to do and get them for a million. So you can ramp pretty well. I kind of like the idea of like something like Pirate's Pillage or Seize the Spoils as being like cute options, or Lex. Like, think about this. Like, you have your 1,000-year storm on the battlefield. You cast a couple of little things, little instances of sorceries, and you cast the Seize the Spoils for, let's say, you get 3 copies. Does this not sound like just like that's a very reasonable expectation to have, I think. Would you agree?
Yep.
So, Seize the Spoils, Pirate's Pillage, Pirate's Prize. Like, your ramp's a little bit different, but I don't think your ramp is going to be bad. And, you know, sounds like fun. The land, the mana base is pretty cool. A couple of things, like a lot of red-blue sort of utility lands. I like the inclusion of Mirror Pool. Mirror Pool has the ability to be used as a way to copy instants and sorceries. So I think Mirror Pool is going to be a big hit in a deck like this. So, yeah. Oh. Lux, any thoughts on our Galazeth deck?
And if I had the money for it, yeah, this is a deck I would brew.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I'll be honest with you, it's a little over our usual budget, but it's $185, which is a little on the pricey side, but let's be real. Like, if we told you could build this and it's going to be fun to play, This is your style of deck to build, you wouldn't really mind. I don't think 185 is 100% is out of the question, right? Is it, Lux?
No, not really.
No, I guess I'd say like, it might take you a little longer to assemble the pieces. That's what I kind of think. This is the sort of deck where it might take you, call it 3 months to assemble the cards you want, because some of them are a little more expensive, right? Like, you want a Goldspan Dragon, you're going to pay out your nose for it. Right? 1,000-year Storm is a $12 card. Primal Amulet's like almost 14. Like, there are some extensive bits and pieces to the deck.
Yeah.
But I think most of the deck is pretty affordable. Like, the vast majority of the deck is under $10.
Yeah, but
Narset's Reversal is 7.5. Like,
yeah, but this is one of those non-green decks that I would definitely build.
Oh, so we got your I got your attention, did I? Well, good for me.
Yeah, because they just like combo up enough, and you can literally just one shot anyone.
Oh, I think that's sort of the idea. Like, I think I would like to see this sort of deck, like sort of storm. It's like storm. Storm without. Having fun, packs enough interesting creatures that you're going to be able to probably, do something. So, pretty okay with it. Anyway. Seems like a fun deck. Any lots on the deck there, Lux?
And Honestly, like, this seems like a pretty solid deck. Big time.
That seems pretty decent, and we'll have to build it and see how it goes. So I think the moral of the story here, folks. All right. Any last thoughts there, Lux, before we move up? All right. Let's wrap it up then. All right. So that's going to wrap up this week's show. Big thank you to Lux for joining me tonight, and let's have and thank you to all of you out there in the internet listening to us. I've been interesting, Lux. You know who in the month of May has been our biggest audience? Not America this month. You know that so far, like halfway through the month, has not been the United States of America. The people who have listened to us most? There's somebody over in Germany that, or the German IP address. I don't know. Maybe it's somebody who's not German, but someone with the German IP address keeps listening to our podcast. And so thanks very much, people in Germany. Whoever's listening, we'd like to come right in. We'd love to hear from you people, because I didn't think that we'd be people in Germany who would be listening to us, but they're the number one audience this week or this month so far. And I mean, it's only the 11th of May, but that's kind of cool. Like, I didn't think that, I never anticipated that people living in Germany would be that interested in what's happening here on the podcast. So thank you very much. Like, it's really exciting, actually, to think there's people all over the world that are listening and enjoying what we do. So thank you. If you want to leave us some feedback, you can contact us on at our email address at theepicexperimentpodcast@gmail.com. The links to the email list is going to be in the show notes down below, so please check it out. If you want to find us on Twitter, you can find us at @epicexpcast. That is our Twitter handle, and that's probably the easiest way to get a hold of us. Send us a direct message, or tag us on a message, or whatever you want to do. If you like this week's deck or any of the decks we do here on the show, you can find us on moxville.com. Please look up the username The Epic Experiment Podcast. Also, on any of the platforms that you guys frequent, or if you want to check us out, please leave a comment, like, follow, subscribe. Every little bit helps get the word out that we are here each and every week talking Commander for you guys. We're having fun. We're doing it. We're loving it. But we love to hear from you guys. How can we make the show better for you? Is there a segment you'd like to see us change? Is there a segment you'd like to see us add? Is there something that did you not like my take on Circle of Protection? Did you think I was too harsh on Simic decks? Whatever it is you'd like to do, let us know. Next week, I believe there are no spoilers next week, Deluxe. So we'll probably review an older set. Maybe we'll have another Elder Dragon as our commander next week. Ooh. Elder Dragons are lots of fun.
Yep.
So, all right. But that is for next week. So until then, this is the Epic Experiment Podcast signing off, wishing you all the best wherever you live. Thanks very much, everybody. Take care. Talk to you next time.